Well, hello everybody. My name is Larry Jacobs and welcome to 3K12 Education Talk Radio on a glorious day, the 17th of June, 2021. As you know, Education Talk Radio is now the voice of the American Consortium for Equity in Education. And our organization and everything we do is at ace-ed.org, ace-ed.org, our wonderful online journal. Equity and Access is over there. You'll love it if you go over there, check it out. Everything we do is free over there. We archive all of our podcasts at ace-ed.org as well, including this one, which is going to be a really nice one. Amy Valentine is here from an organization, and she calls it intermediary organization, called Future of School. And they are running, among the other things they do, we're going to talk about all that, but I want to do this first because it's timely, okay? They are running an awards program for resilient districts post or during, however you want to phrase that, pandemic, okay? And the application date runs through June 30th. Today is June 17th. So let's talk about this first as you define Future of School, your organization. Everybody, it's Amy Valentine. Hello again, Amy. Welcome back.
Hi, Larry. Thank you for having me. It's great to talk to you again.
It's a pleasure to have you here, almighty education evangelist. That's what you are. Okay. You walk around in long flowing robes like Noah or something.
I do. I have scrolls and I say education is the cornerstone and it is at the core of the human spirit. I do. I have my bylines and I'm sticking to them.
There you go, and I like the way you walk around with scrolls, tablets, like, and, you know, I like that. It's good. Okay, and before we go further, I want to say this. The organization is Future of School. The website is futureof.school, okay, futureof.school, and that will get you right there. Amy, talk about what you're doing with Future of School and about the Resilient Districts Award. Of course, that's got a deadline.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Yep, absolutely. It sure does. And we're really excited to be able to honor, celebrate, and then also share the amazing achievements, strategies, and best practices that are happening. So what inspired us to create this program? You know, we've been giving grants to educators for 5 years, and we've also been publishing research on the efficacy and potential for blended and online learning in K-12 schools for 5 years as well. And so when the pandemic hit, we saw it as we saw the opportunity and the need to tell the positive stories, as well as capturing what those strategies are that educators are implementing so that when the leaders and educators who right now aren't quite ready to step into transformation, when they are ready, we have a repository and a body of evidence and best practices that they can tap into that have worked, that really were created from the ground up during, before, you know, after, whatever we phrase it, the pandemic.
And talk about this award. Okay, because I want people to apply. Do they go to the website to do that? All right, and who are we honoring? Who will win the award? Because does it go to districts? Does it go to educators? Okay, what are you measuring as a criteria? All right, and go into all that sort of stuff. I just want to cover this so we get it out of the way real quick. Okay, so we get at the top of the show here.
Yep, the nuts and bolts, completely. So the Resilient District Prize is open until June 30th. People can apply on our website. It's futureof.school/RDP for Resilient District Prize. And to answer your question, yes, yes, and yes, the program is available. We have the tiered awards. We're giving awards to districts, consortiums of schools, and networks of schools, right? So that tier of larger groupings, and so the funding is larger. It's up to $25,000 for networks of schools or one district that implemented something. It doesn't have to be for the entire district, but the district, it came from the district level. We are also giving up to $15,000 awards to a school that did something creative and innovative, and then awards of up to $10,000 to individual educators.
Wow.
We want to make sure that we capture the entrepreneurial spirit during a crisis, right? I mean, those two things usually run against each other. But during this pandemic, we've seen and heard lots of stories of creativity being tapped into in classrooms and schools. But unfortunately, we don't have, there hasn't been a national vehicle to share those. So we want to collect those, because teachers love and educators love sharing what they do, because they know ultimately it helps other students. So three different tiers. The criteria is there had to have been some sort of tech-based best or next practice or strategy that was implemented as a direct result of COVID-19 that had an impact at the school. It could have had an academic impact, an SEL impact. It could have helped with retention of students. We're not limiting what the impact is, because we want to hear from the people who have those creative ideas. We want them to tell us, and we want to both share those out and then honor them, celebrate them. I mean, there's not enough celebration that happens, and this gives us the opportunity to do that. So I'll go to your other question that you yeah. asked, and that's, okay, well, these funds, what can they be used for? They can be used for purchasing technology, curriculum, to support professional development, which we know mm-hmm. is a very hot topic, and it continues to be very critically important, parent training, and other blended learning ed tech type of costs that schools need to be able to continue moving down the road of transforming teaching and learning in their district, school, or classroom.
On that note, Amy, and you're good at this, okay? And I'll say it this way. You on the website, again, which is futureof.school, all right, you say you're an organization that wants to mobilize change, and I like this, by the way, in American K-12 education, from, quote, a one-size-fits-all system to one that ensures that all students receive their unbounded potential, no matter where their learning takes place. That's a wonderful thing to look forward to, okay, all of that. That's what we're about. That's really the definition of equity, all right? That's what we're all about here with our consortium mm-hmm. for equity, and I'm just very, very, very impressed with that. Knowing that, okay, where are we, in your opinion, where are we now in the K-12 system? All right, just put it into perspective these days. And I have to say this too. Yesterday, and I found it to be a fairly odd column. There was a column in the New York Times, an educator who said, it was basically said, no kids learned anything this past year. Okay, I do not agree with that. And it just struck me as an odd thing to put in there. That's the way I read it anyway. It was in the New York Times yesterday. People can get their make their own opinions. All right, I didn't like the column. All right, but maybe I know too much about education. All right, where do you think we are now? Where would you like it to be?
Amy? Do we have 2 hours together or 3 hours
we
together?
We don't. So do the best.
I'm just kidding.
If you can answer that in the next 35 minutes, I will give you a PhD from the University of Larry. They're very valuable.
Then the pressure's on. The pressure's on. No, I have everything that you said.
You'll be Dr. Valentine from then on. So.
Okay. Well, look at you giving me some things to aspire to here. Everything you said, Larry, I agree with, right? We are at this critical juncture in our country to step into true, longstanding transformation of the K-12 education system, where every student can follow a pathway that works for them, that meets their needs. So going to the article from the New York Times, you know, there's different schools of thought and different camps. If one thinks that education happens in a building delivered by a teacher with books and pencils, then for them, that paradigm was shattered during the pandemic. So for them, in their mind, learning didn't happen. There's another camp, and I think you and I both, this is the camp that we exist in, and it's learning happens anywhere, anytime. The pandemic provided the opportunity to show that school is a noun, right? School was a noun, but now it's schooling can happen anywhere, anytime. And kids, I heard amazing stories of kids learning how to cook using TikTok recipes when they were home. Children who learned about themselves through the struggles and through the journey of crisis schooling. You know, it was, there was pain points for them. Parents learning about their children, how their children learn.
Yeah.
That's why I said learning is at the core of the human spirit. And we're at a place in our country where if one thought that how it was working, that was working, you know, K-12 education as it stood, then they would think that we need to go back to that. But people that understand that employers have been struggling to find a ready workforce for years and
yep.
standardized test scores don't reflect a child's knowledge. And in many cases, they cause a lot of fear and anxiety, which nullifies the whole point of what you're trying to do. And so
exactly.
while I could go on and on, yeah, it's for us at Future of School, we don't say technology is the answer. We say technology is the catalyst to bring forth the much needed change that will reflect the society that we live in. K-12 education system is the only, we'll call it vertical in our society, it's the only vertical or entity that has not been rapidly transformed by technology. And we have this great opportunity to do that, not with one program, not with one computer type, but really for whatever that school or community needs. And it would be a shame. It would be a shame if we don't take advantage of that, because innovation and ingenuity really can come out of crisis. I do believe that.
Absolutely, and as I always say with this damn pandemic, and everybody knows this, I mean, 600,000 people died, okay? Families are really mm-hmm. hurting, all right? So the pandemic was absolutely horrible, but, you know, when you get lemons, you make lemonade, all right? And there is opportunity to do that. You just said something that struck me. You said, I'm going to try to paraphrase it now, that we need to use technology, I forget the way you phrase it, that education has not changed, that we're not using the technology as well as we should. I think that's the way you said that. Okay? And talk about that, because I know you're an educational technology person, and you know how great it can be. I believe it has made a tremendous difference. But I think what you're saying is it hasn't gone far enough, all right? And I'm just curious, can you put that into perspective for me, if you remember the way you phrased that?
Yeah. It hasn't penetrated our K-12 system and really in a way that's reached a tipping point. When the pandemic hit, you heard stories of, parents and leaders and just people, citizens, saying, being very surprised that every child didn't have a laptop or that they had to deliver Wi-Fi
yes,
cards.
Yes.
There's misnomer. There's a social misnomer about what the system as a whole. And I'm not blaming the system. It's not, it's not by no means. I'm not blaming the system for the stagnancy. It's just it is what it is, and it's been a certain way for so long. And so when the pandemic hit, it was Maslow's hierarchy of needs. We need to deliver meals to students. We need to make sure their needs are met. And then it was, okay, if we're going to require them to be online, we need to make sure they have the tools and resources they need.
Right.
And there were many people that scratched their head and said, what do you mean these kids don't have a laptop? What do you mean
don't
have a tablet? What do you mean? And then it was, what do you mean their family doesn't have Wi-Fi access?
Exactly.
So
it's they don't
easy
have access.
When we're
they don't
sitting
have access
in
learning.
Our
system. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So the basic needs needed to be met, and that was a basic need. And we saw corporations, telecommunications corporations and, phone company, we saw them step up to the plate and provide for that in a way that was inspirational, to come together and make sure that families and schools and teachers had what they needed. So we know it's possible. And I don't think under any other circumstances other than something like this, would we have seen such a rapid mobilization to get kids what they need, to keep them connected? And like I said, it gives us a great opportunity. At the beginning of the pandemic, there was some research that came out around, parents feeling uncomfortable with how the learning was happening. We've said at Future of School through the pandemic, online learning isn't new to America. Instead, it's new to most Americans in the K-12 space.
Yep.
But what happened last spring wasn't online learning. It was crisis schooling. So that's where the education piece of our society has to happen.
Yeah. And we all intrinsically, I think everybody knew that all the kids weren't covered. We all kind of knew this, but things were kind of plodding along. All right.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, just kind of, well, yeah, we're doing okay. You know, things are getting better and slowly but surely. And all of a sudden, my line is that we kicked the can down the road, and finally we got to the end of the road, and there was a cliff, and we all fell off together.
Yep.
Okay.
Yep.
On March 13th. You know, and suddenly, but we all knew that cliff was there. Okay. And it
mm-hmm.
took this darn pandemic, okay, to show it to us. All right, and it's just astounding. So, all this said, and you want every kid, like we do, it's equity, to get the tools that that particular student needs or group of students to make a difference and reach their potential. Okay, do you see hope? Do you see good hope on the horizon? What? And I'll phrase it another way. Okay, as you've obviously been talking to school districts, Amy. Okay, and you're hearing things. You're hearing the change. This is what your contest is about, resilient education. Talk about what just give some examples of what you've been hearing of great resiliency from the school districts that say to all of us, yeah, we're going to make it and we're going to do better. What are some good examples?
Yeah, that's a great question. I would say we actually worked with 12 districts and schools this year in a resilient schools project. So we brought 12 districts and 11 districts and one school together that were committed to long-term transformation. They didn't know how to do it, but they said, we're going to prioritize this and together we'll figure it out. So I think what the lessons learned from our biweekly meetings and from the relationships that they built was the most critical component is the mindset. It's a mindset for stepping into reconfiguring, you know, your school culture, your district, you know, your district model, even if you're not sure what the new is, because so much of this past year has been responding in real time to different changes and to the, you know, to the challenges that were happening. So these leaders we can bend, but we're not going to break. And we know that together we can accomplish so much more. So the most critical piece is the mindset. You know, the reverse mindset of, well, we just need to bite it.
I lost you for a second. What? Say it again. I don't know what happened. Yeah. We lost a few words.
Oh, yeah.
Got it.
Yeah, it's the bend. We can bend, but we're not going to break. Nothing is going to break us, and we're going to be stronger. And when you have that mindset, then that filters over to your parents, to your students, to your teachers.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's the most critical component. And then from that point of commitment, we saw districts like Berkeley County School District in South Carolina.
Mm-hmm.
Relatively shortly after the year started, they stood up a blended learning resource hub, and they built the train while they were building the tracks with this hub, but they weren't afraid to put it out there. They weren't afraid to say, this isn't complete, but we want your input on how we're going to do this. So that's one example of stepping into, just stepping into creativity on the go, on the fly, and bringing
mm-hmm.
in stakeholders.
Mm-hmm.
Another example, which we heard from many, was districts and schools standing up and saying, okay, remote learning worked for some. Hybrid learning worked
mm-hmm.
for some.
That's right.
So
we
are committed to offering this as an option for next year and carving out the time and resources and bringing in their educators to say, how should we build this? What worked? What didn't? So Dorchester, too, in South Carolina did that as well. And the third example is much more granular, but I found it to be fascinating. I work with a local school. I love to be involved at the community level, and they expanded their electives for their middle school students next year to include courses that they never offered before, such as core inner strength and
SEL.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Core inner strength and a new mentorship program that's all centered around resiliency, which had nothing to do with the resilience work that we're doing. They came
mm-hmm.
up with it on their own. And even them reconsidering, okay, we aren't just going to teach math. We are going to offer this very creative elective of school store and personal finance and business finance. They didn't offer that before. It's a way for them to have some more social distancing in the school.
I like that.
Use different space.
I like that.
but they didn't offer that before. So even for what we're offering students to teach and instill in them that they can bend, but they're not going to break without overstepping into any, you know, territory of, you know, a value system. It's a concept. Like if the school's going to bend and not break, then we can emulate that for our staff and our students.
You can indeed. By the way, are you in South Carolina? The way you just phrased that, I got a feeling you were. Are you?
No, I'm in Colorado, but four of our 12 districts from the RSP, they came from South Carolina. So we have lots of examples in South Carolina.
Yeah, and South Carolina, I've done a lot of work with South Carolina school districts. And sometimes they struggle. There's a little bit of poverty down there, but like there is everywhere, I might add. But they're good educators down there, and they are well-meaning educators, and the state is growing like absolute crazy right now. Okay, and it's going to be hot.
Yeah.
Stay in Colorado. Don't visit them again until after the summer. Take my word for that.
Yeah.
You know, you said something else that was incredibly important. You passed over it. And the thing is, we are all in this together. And you mentioned these South Carolina districts. They're, although they are separate districts, okay, believe me, they're all facing the same basic challenges, okay? Challenges. Mm. And to get them working together and share information. And the fact of the matter is, I hope we've learned this, and talk about technology, okay, and Zoom meetings, if I may, and everything else. Every school district doesn't have to reinvent the wheel every time. Other people are in the same boat, and they're able to overcome this, okay? And so organizations like Future of School, okay, mean so very much to that kind of resiliency, if I may. Okay, we all got stuck in the same mess. Let's see what all of us are doing. You don't have to figure it out all by yourself. It's really, really something, I'll tell you. It just really is. I want to ask you, because you do a podcast too, and I'm always happy to get information out there. Your Future of School podcast, one big idea. Brag a little. Go for it. Talk about it, Amy.
Yeah, one big idea. I mean, it's tapping into the imagination and the ideas, everybody. Now, I said, let's have everybody on our podcast. Every American has to have one big idea about education. And, you know, if we only had a staff that could interview every single person, that would be amazing.
Yeah.
So we started with a group of stakeholders that we, you know, that we have had heard of, or that we, you know, we knew is, you know, that they're doing innovative work. And we wanted to have essentially a diverse group of people come on the podcast, be interviewed in a very brief time. They only had 10 minutes to pitch their one big idea about reimagining education.
What
if
would
you
be
could
an
make,
example? What would be, can you think of one? What would be a cool example?
Yeah, I mean, all of them have such great merit. And it's interesting because they were all different. But the one that comes to mind is the student that we had on. She's a junior right now. And her one big idea was to do away with or come up with a different way instead of the ACT or SAT, that she didn't feel like that represented her qualifications and her commitment and everything she's done to be on the production team for the drama department. It's just a one snapshot. And as she's applying for colleges, she had suffered from low self-esteem because of her test scores. Not that she didn't do well, but she was concerned that that was going to be the one metric that was really used to determine if she could go to the college that she wants for film studies. And so her proposal was, why can't we turn in a portfolio? Why can't we show the body of evidence of all the things we've done in high school and maybe middle school that is multidimensional, that represents who we are? So Haley's story from the perspective of a 16-year-old girl was really powerful, because we talk about these things. We talk about standardized testing and assessments. We talk about these things as adults, but to hear it from the student perspective was really eye-opening.
Well, I have to tell you, school districts can learn a lot from Walmart, okay? Because Walmart...
Mm-hmm.
If you just ask the Walmart executives, you're going to get one answer. But if you ask, and Walmart knows this, if you ask the Walmart customers, you're going to get the answer you really need when you're doing your surveys and all that to better your business, Walmart being just one example. And, of course, the whole idea of student voice – okay, is so important. And that young lady you just described also described me. I did very well in school and horrible on my SATs.
Yeah.
All right. Now, I did get into the school I wanted to go to, but it wasn't that great a school back then. It is now. Okay. And, you know, but she's right. It creates just a snapshot. And if she wanted to go to film school. This is an interesting point. That's an art, so to speak. And they do accept the portfolio. And I guarantee you this child will get in, okay, somewhere with a good portfolio, assuming it is good. But if you want to go into a science, okay, or whatever, you still need a portfolio, and they should be looking at that. That's just a great point. It's not just for arts is my point there, okay? And the more you delve into that and think about it, I mean, it's just a great idea. 10 minutes, I love it. Boom. Good kid.
Exactly.
Good kid. I love hearing from the kids. Wow. It's just amazing. Okay. This resilient district thing that you're doing, okay, is going – let me ask you a different question. When all said and done, what do you want to come out of all this? Okay, now I know you want an archive of all the good stuff that these school districts did, but the bigger philosophical picture, what do you want to come out of all this? What do you want to see? What do you want schools to be like 5 years from now?
Yeah, they're great questions. I will tell you, I'll start from the organizational perspective. it's been a few years since I've been on your show, and when I first came on, we were a traditional foundation. We were a grant-making foundation that wanted to storytell, and we're very successful at telling the stories of students and educators raising their voices for the impact that blended and online learning had on their lives and on their relationships with each other. Since that time, we've changed our name to Future of School because we want to touch the average American. You know, the average American needs a place to go to access information, to learn, and to share their story. And we also are transitioning from foundation to public charity. And public, you know, we aspire to be the Make-A-Wish Foundation, the American Heart Association of the education sector as a public charity. So that's the end goal for us as an organization. Because there are lots of organizations doing important, amazing work.
Yep.
But our commitment to access and equity through the lens of the student and the educator, that goes unparalleled. And so that's a lot bigger picture, longer answer for.
Oh, no.
Yeah, when we have these strategies, then we can amplify them. So we want to grow our network. We want people to know we're a nonprofit. We're an education intermediary. We're here to be the conduit, to be the super connector, and to gather and to share, and to make sure that in 5 years, schools, personally, my goal would be that a student never says, I hate school, or school is boring, that kids go to school inspired, excited, maybe not every day, they're kids, right? Like they, you know, they're kids. Kids are kids, and the grass is greener on the other side.
Yeah, we're
but
not, ha-
got
adults,
to get out
we're
of
not
this
happy
rut.
Going to work every day, but overall, let's think that overall picture.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, yeah. But we have the opportunity to learn a lot and to transform, to prepare kids for life.
Yeah, and your point is, If I put words in your mouth, I think you're on the same track. You meet these kids where each individual kid is, so that they're not bored with school. Okay, that even when we have to teach them algebra, but we have to teach them algebra so it's relevant to them. Okay, and that's something that we I'm not picking on algebra teachers, by the way. You can extrapolate this to almost any subject. Okay. But, you know, we've always just taught it in a vacuum, all right? Mm-hmm. And we can't do that anymore. And if you do it right, the change comes from the bottom, from the kids themselves, who say, I don't like this. We can do it better this way. And the system can change, all right? It's good stuff what you're doing, I have to tell you. And this is fun. One more time, go over it again. Resilient Districts Prize, they go to Future of.school, and there's an application form there and all that sort of stuff?
Yep, there's a link, /RDP, and you can sign up to join us, you know, join our distribution list, and then also click to apply, and it'll take you straight to the portal.
Beautiful. And when are you going to send out the money? When are you going to announce the district winners?
We're on a pretty aggressive timeline, so winners will be announced mid-August. We want to make sure they have resources and the funding for this coming school year.
Well, I'll certainly offer you this. In mid-August, if you want to set up a date for another podcast, we can announce it here on the show, or you can announce it your own way, and we can double announce it here on the show.
That would be wonderful. I would love that. That would be great.
That
will help us celebrate.
That is a sincere invitation, my dear. So.
Oh, thank you.
I hope we do that, okay? We would love to be part of it. We're on the same wavelength here, and we love getting information out about everybody. So I think it's just great, all right? And I'll be in touch with our mutual friend, Ross, and we'll talk about this, okay?
Okay.
Okay, this is super.
Thanks for all the work you're leading, Larry.
Thank you. Back at you. Same thing. Okay, I think it's wonderful. Okay, congratulations.
Thank you.
Great. Where are you in Colorado, by the way?
In Castle Rock, just south of Denver.
I know it. Okay, good. Beautiful place.
Yeah.
Okay, it is gorgeous.
Yep.
All right. Stay safe, Aime. All right, we'll talk soon.
Thanks.
All right, I'm serious about
Take
that
care,
all
Larry.
This thing. Okay, thank you.
Okay, me too.
Bye-bye.
Perfect.
Thanks.
Bye.
Bye. Aime Valentine, everybody. futureof.school. Go there. Fill out the form. Go do it. I think it's /RDP. Okay, Resilient District Prize, RDP. All right, we'll archive over at ace-ed.org. I'm Larry Jacobs. Go see what we do over there, okay? Join with us. It's really good stuff over at ace-ed.org. Thanks for listening, everybody.